This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
If you were following the Tepe murders, here's something that might make you a little bit unsettled. If you're kind of putting yourself in the situation and the mindset of those that would have been around Monique, her family, on paper, he was everything you'd want your daughter to marry. I mean, to this day, if you don't know about the, you know, past, the alleged 8-year obsession, take that out of, just, if you're looking at accomplishments, if you're looking at, okay, this is what this guy's documented history is of accomplishments, you go, damn, this guy seems to really, you know, it takes some discipline to get where you got. Take some discipline, take some smarts, take some strategy, takes a lot of things. That's why it makes it all the more shocking when you're like, you did what? How? Why? National Merit Scholar, Biology Student of the Year, Honorable Mention, All-Star Football, fifth in his class at a Catholic high school in Zanesville, Ohio, altar server at St. Nicholas Parish, top 25 in the state history contest, Ohio State undergrad, Ohio State Medical School, surgical residency at Virginia Tech, fellowship at the University of Maryland, board-certified vascular surgeon with active licenses in multiple states, and not a single disciplinary mark on his record. And allegedly, in the early morning hours of December 30th, 2025, he drove over 300 miles from Illinois to Columbus, Ohio, entered his ex-wife's home while her two children slept in nearby rooms, shot her husband, Spencer Tepe, multiple times, shot Monique Tepe once, and then drove back. Left the kids, ages 1 and 4, crying in their beds next to the dead parents. And in his mind, probably because she had it coming. Because she broke my heart. Because this, because that. Because he's a wound collector. If he did it. That's how he's thinking. I mean, it all does kind of track. I mean, look at that discipline in life of his accomplishments that weren't murderous if he did this. And then 300 miles there, do what he's going to do, drive back. Very, very rigid. Tracks. It really does track. This man, when he sets his mind to something, he does it. Unfortunately, when you have a broken brain, sometimes those things you set your mind to don't always pan out so well for anyone. If the evidence holds, and there is a lot of it, this wasn't a crime of passion. This was allegedly a surgical strike, planned, executed, and potentially 8 years in the making. So who is Michael David McKee, and what turns a golden boy into an accused killer? McKee was, according to reports, adopted as an infant by a former Tri-Valley Local Schools administrator and his wife in Zanesville, Ohio. He was their only child, and by all accounts, he grew up in a stable, close-knit community in Muskegon County. Sounds, you know, oh, what you doing there in Muskegon? Oh, you know, not much. We got the bake sale this weekend. Gonna have a little outside the grocery store sale. We're going to get everybody around. I know it's going to be chilly. We're going to wear our mittens. We're going to wear our mittens and our poodle is going to be there. And you come by, you get some of the baked goods, and it's going to be a lovely time here in Muskegon. You know, it's that kind of place. People who knew him back in the day described him as articulate, bright, self-determined, a cool kid. Started making a local paper as a first grader in 1994, winning honorable mention in a poster contest from then Secretary of State Bob Taft. I do wonder a little bit about this guy, because if he did this, I believe he's a wound collector, meaning he doesn't let anything go. Also, with that personality type, they don't let anything go, good and bad. So I'm wondering if the honorable mention in the poster contest, whatever, you know, signature there from Bob Taft. I wonder if that was on his fridge as a 30-some-year-old adult man who's a vascular surgeon. You know, like, I totally get you. You have your diplomas on your wall. Yeah, you're an adult. These are adult, you know, things that you'd love to display, that you should display, you should be proud of. But I do wonder, like, is there like third grade, like, Pinewood Derby Championship Awards, you know, proudly displayed on the mantle. I do wonder about these things, because it wouldn't surprise me. Because with the, again, a lot of assuming here, this is all opinion, obviously. But when you have personality types like this, they aren't always the greatest at being able to weigh the importance of different elements of life. It's like everything is equal weight, meaning Pinewood Derby champion 1993 and graduating with honors from the college, like, might be on the same plane, where obviously they should be very different, but sometimes that type of brain doesn't hold things the same way, which also explains why they're able and why they act out sometimes in certain ways, because a slight here, you know, somebody flipping you off in the parking lot at the Kroger, you know, might be just as devastating as, you know, your ex-wife leaving you. Everything is like chaos to the nth degree. Everything is a tragedy. Everything is a disrespect and an insult. I'm going to guess he uses the words disrespect a lot. But I want to throw this out there. Anybody who knew this guy, anybody who worked with this guy, you can remain anonymous. I would love to hear from you. I'm not asking for anything. I'm curious about personality traits. How was he as a human? Because I'm going to guess this man used the word disrespect all the time, and how disrespected he felt at everything. That's how these wound collector type folks are. I know. It tells you a lot. I mean, it tells you a lot that we were even able to find out that he was honorable mention in whatever the hell that was. I got to go back at the copy here. What was it? It was not Pinewood Derby. I know that. Well, whatever it was. It was, you know, kind of weird. I don't know that the rest of us are going to be able to find information like that by Googling. Even if you murdered someone, that's like a deep one to find. Honorable mention in a poster contest from then Secretary of State Bob Taft. His entry was a drawing of a smiling bell with the slogan, "Let freedom ring, vote." That would have been for the Clinton first run campaign, I think, right? Yeah, because it would have been Bush into Clinton at that time. So, yeah. There you go. At 13, he earned excellent marks at State Science Day. He won the city spelling bee. He played varsity football for 4 years at Bishop Rosencrantz High School, basketball for 3, did student council, key club, the whole resume building playbook. He was one of those kids. Nothing wrong with that. That's great. Great. I mean, talk about, you know, setting yourself up on a good track. Graduated with a 3.9 GPA, headed to Ohio State, where he met a young woman named Monique Sabaturski. She was from Worthington. They were both undergrads, and something about the relationship would define and allegedly destroy the next decade of both their lives. They married in August 22nd of 2015. McKee had just graduated from medical school. He was 28. Monique was working at Nationwide. On paper, he looked, or kind of looked like two Ohio State sweethearts were starting their lives together. It lasted 7 months. By March of 2016, they were separated. Monique filed for divorce in May of 2017. It was finalized in June. The stated reason was incompatibility. That catch-all term that tells you nothing and everything pretty much at the same time. But here's where what the divorce papers don't say. According to Monique's brother-in-law, Rob Mislay, McKee was emotionally abusive throughout the marriage. Mislay told reporters that Monique confided in family about the torment McKee put her through. "Myself and many others, we were well aware of the negative impact that he had on her," Miss Lay said. "The abuse that he put her through, the torment that he put her through, She was willing to do anything to get out of there. Ms. Lay also stated that McKee threatened Monique's life while they were married. And here's another thing. This matters most. Monique never stopped being afraid of him. Even 8 years later, even after she'd remarried, even after she'd built a happy life with Spencer Tepe and two beautiful children, it was like she had just completely forgotten. It wasn't like she had just completely forgotten about him, Ms. Lay said. She would talk quite often about how terrified she was of him and how much he messed with her mental health, and it was lasting. Lasting. 8 years after a seven-month marriage. That's not a bad breakup. That's a haunting. And for anybody out there going, oh, come on, she just couldn't get over it. Be thankful you've never been in one of those relationships. Be thankful no one has ever messed with you mentally that much. Because I'll tell you what, those are scars that don't go away. Even with therapy, even with all that. Yeah, I mean, it's just... Be thankful. If you can't relate, if you can't understand, my advice would be shut the F up because you don't get it. And consider yourself lucky that you don't.
Well, I've been through this and it wasn't
that bad then. You were in something that wasn't as bad as this. It is spooky what people are capable of. Let's talk about what McKee did after the divorce, because this is where the pattern becomes clear. He didn't move on. I don't know that he could. I don't know that his brain would allow him to. And obviously, this is all my opinion. Reports indicate that after Monique filed, McKee initially resisted signing the divorce papers. And according to accounts discussed by analysts covering the case, he allegedly continued sending her birthday cards after the divorce was finalized, signed, "Your husband." Why are you even sending birthday cards to your ex-wife? And before someone out there goes out and tries to normalize it, well, I send birthday cards to my ex-husband, and we have a great relationship, and we have kids together, and I'm not, like, great, that's not this. There's no kids here. She's terrified. He's screwing with her. It's evil behavior.
I don't know about that.
Well, I do. You're divorced and you're sending someone a card in general. Number two, you're signing it your husband. There's one purpose there. Torment. Make them fear, because that's the only thing a very small penis man like this guy can do. I said it. He has a small one. Again, my conjecture. I'm just going to guess. And if anybody out there would like to confirm that, you can let us know. Think about this for a second. The marriage is over, legally dissolved. She's moved on, and he's reportedly still signing cards as her husband. I mean, if true, that's not grief. That's denial in the clinical sense. That's behavior consistent with a man who decided reality does not apply to him. The marriage ended, but in his mind, it never did. Meanwhile, McKee's career took him across the country, Virginia for residency, Nevada for practice, California, Maryland, Illinois. He collected medical licenses like frequent flyer miles. He served on the Nevada Department of Corrections Medical Review Panel. He worked at Las Vegas Surgical Associates. Eventually, he landed at OSF St. Anthony Medical Center in Rockford, Illinois. And in 2025, he purchased a condominium in Chicago overlooking Franklin Park near the Lincoln Park Zoo. He's a successful surgeon living alone in a luxury high-rise. And in all that time, multiple states, a lucrative career, never remarried, never allegedly had another serious relationship that's been reported. His only marriage was those 7 months with Monique. And again, I gotta say, look, if you know different, if you had a relationship with this man in any way, shape, or form, you can remain anonymous. I would love to hear what that was like. Please do send us a message through whatever channel you like. Substack, hiddenkillers.substack.com. It's a way to message us directly right there, and it's absolutely free. or through social media. Again, you can remain anonymous. I'd be very curious for anybody that knew this man and his personality. I'm trying to understand it better. Really trying to understand it better. This is a guy who, you know, had the world in the palm of his hand. He could do anything he wanted. He had the money, he had the career, he had a great history, a great track record of success in life. If he could just get this right up here. But no. His rigid, messed up way of thinking wouldn't let him move on from Monique, allegedly. Let's talk about the malpractice lawsuits, because those are a little weird, because they reveal something important about how McKee operated when he wanted to disappear. There's so many tells in his actions. This is a man who does not do well with any sort of conflict in any, like, I really am guessing he's one of those people that it's like he's so opposed to the conflict or anybody telling him that he's wrong at anything that it probably literally pains him, and he disappears. He backs out. He tries to correct in his mind that person to whatever degree he must. And if they cannot be corrected, if his way cannot be seen and his way cannot succeed, more importantly, he destroys. My conjecture, but it's kind of looking like what happened. If I were the person that had brought these lawsuits, number one, it's horrible. I'm sorry that this happened to you. But number two, in a weird way, I consider myself a little bit lucky I'm not dead, because I wouldn't be surprised if you too were on the hit list of inconveniences to him in his mind, or wrongs in his mind, ways he's been wronged by someone. And what do you do when you've been wronged by someone? You don't take accountability, you destroy. Wouldn't be surprised if there might have been a plan there for you next. That's, again, my conjecture, if he did it. In July of 23, a patient at Las Vegas Surgical Associates underwent a laser treatment for low, extremely venous insufficiency. The procedure was performed by a physician's assistant, allegedly under McKee's supervision, and during the procedure, a catheter, or device something like a catheter, fractured, leaving an 8.6-inch piece of plastic tubing inside the patient's body. Emergency surgery was required to remove it, and a lawsuit was filed, and McKee then vanished. Didn't like, oh, God, let's make this right. This is horrible. Learn from our mistakes. You know, none of that. Just gone. That's not normal behavior. Things like, I mean, I don't know how frequently this happens, but there's a reason surgeons and such have insurance, and why you're, accidents will happen. Things will happen. I mean, it's goes with the job. I don't know if this was an accident or malpractice or foolish. I don't know. I don't know what the hell it was. But again, you deal with your problems. You don't disappear from them. Las Vegas attorney Dan Laird spent nearly 2 years trying to serve McKee with the papers. His process server documented at least 9 separate attempts. The address provided by Las Vegas Surgical Associates, it was fake, didn't exist. The phone number McKee gave to the Nevada State Medical Board, it connected to a fax machine. In October of 25, just 2 months before the murders, Laird reached out to one of McKee's former colleagues, Dr. Peter Carvella, who was also named in the suit. Carvella's response was chilling. He said he has no idea where Michael McKee is now. He just disappeared. Laird was stunned. They tend to be highly responsible people, he said, of doctors. They're not the kind of people who just disappeared suddenly. And this was very surprising to us. A judge eventually granted a declaration of due diligence, allowing McKee to be served via newspaper notice, a method so rare that Laird had only used it once before in his 12-year career. And notably, no malpractice insurance attorney has ever stepped forward to represent McKee, suggesting he may not have had coverage. Another disappearing act. There was also a federal lawsuit filed in June of 24 alleging that McKee, while serving on the Nevada Corrections Medical Panel, knowingly delayed care for an incarcerated patient, resulting in permanent injury, including loss of a testicle. McKee denied the allegations. No ruling had been made by the time of the murders. What's important here isn't the lawsuits themselves, it's the behavior. McKee wasn't just avoiding accountability, he was systematically erasing himself. Fake addresses, dead-end phone numbers, colleagues who couldn't find him, a medical license. He let expire. This is a man who knew how to disappear when he wanted to. The question is, why did he want to? So what was happening in McKee's life in the fall of 2025? His Nevada medical license expired in June. The malpractice lawsuits were closing in. Process servers were knocking on the doors that either didn't exist or went unanswered. His professional life was unraveling. Lawsuits closing in. A license expired and no clear path forward. And Monique? She was thriving. She married Spencer Tepe in December of 2020. They'd met online, and by all accounts, it was a beautiful relationship, the kind Monique had been searching for after escaping McKee. They had two children together. They just celebrated their fifth wedding anniversary. Their funeral drew over 1,000 people. That's not a number you hit unless you touch a lot of lives. In her wedding vows to Spencer, Monique spoke about wrong relationships and waterfall of tears. She talked about emotional growth through trial and error. She was clearly referencing her past, and McKee was that past. Forensic criminologist Dr. Laura Richard said McKee may have been stalking Monique in slow motion and using coercive control. She explained there's a drip, drip, drip before the murder of controlling and abusive behavior. Often people don't see the psychological and emotional. People look for the physical abuse. Another forensic criminologist analyzed Monique's vows and said they indicated she went on a journey and there was a tremendous amount of emotional growth through trial and error. She was so emotional and she was so grateful to be there with Spencer that day. Imagine being McKee. If the allegations are true, your life is falling apart, lawsuits you can't escape, a license you let lapse, and your ex-wife, the one you allegedly couldn't let go of, is publicly celebrating her happiness with another man, which there's absolutely nothing wrong with. But because you're so twisted, the vows were where she thanks God for finally finding real love, where she talks about the tears you caused, where she's clearly, finally, blissfully happy for someone who allegedly never let go, that may have been unbearable. And let's be clear about what we're not doing here. We are not diagnosing Michael David McKee with any psychiatric condition. That's not our job, and frankly, it's not possible from the outside. But we can describe what the evidence shows. We can note the patterns. A brief marriage marked by reported emotional abuse and death threats, a reported refusal to accept that the relationship was over, a career that bounced across states, never settling, no subsequent relationships, elaborate evasion of legal accountability, a systematic effort to make himself untraceable, and then allegedly a 300-mile drive to execute two people while the children slept. Public discussions have used words as manipulativeness, lack of empathy, grandiosity, superficial charm, irresponsibility, and failure to accept responsibility. I'm going to go with narcissistic sociopath. That would be the one I would pick with. Coffin Daffer has said evidence of deep-seated resentment and hate. Therapist Jordan Corday described it as neutered resentment, a slow-burning fixation fed by negative memories over 8 years. Whatever label you want to use, the picture that's been painted by family accounts and expert analysis is consistent. A man who could not accept that Monique had moved on, who could not build a life without her, and who allegedly decided that if he couldn't have her, no one would. The mechanics of the crime itself tell you something about the planning allegedly involved. McKee allegedly drove from Illinois to Columbus over 5 hours each way. He allegedly parked near the Tepe home and was captured on surveillance walking in an alley between 2 a.m. and 5 a.m. The vehicle was tracked arriving shortly before the estimated time of the murders and leaving shortly after. There was no forced entry. Monique was shot once in the chest. Spencer was shot multiple times. The children were left unharmed in a separate room. The family dog unharmed. Police found multiple firearms at McKee's Chicago condo. One of them, according to Columbus Police Chief Elaine Bryant, has been preliminary linked to shell casings found at the scene. McKee was arrested January 10th to 26th at a Chick-fil-A in Rockford, Illinois, approximately 3 minutes from the 3 minutes before the murder charges were formally filed. He waived extradition on January 12th. His public defender has said he will plead not guilty. He faces two counts of premeditated aggravated murder, and if convicted, he's looking at life without parole. Ohio's death penalty has been stalled since 2018, so that's likely off the table. He could still get it. It doesn't mean he's going to get it, though. The family saw this coming. One anonymous family member told the Daily Mail they all expected McKee to be connected to the deaths, but weren't saying that out loud because they didn't want to compromise the investigation. Rob Mislay, Spencer's brother-in-law, said the family quickly believed McKee was involved. They knew the history. They knew Monique's fear. And now two young children, 1-year-old and a 4-year-old, are without parents. They're being cared for by family, along with the family dog. They were in the house when it happened. We don't know what they heard. We don't know what they'll remember. Over 1,000 people attended Spencer and Monique's funeral. Their obituary described the couple who shared a beautiful, strong, and deeply happy relationship. Spencer was a dentist who commuted over an hour each way to Athens every day. Monique had a background in childhood education. They met online and built a life together. And if the evidence holds, all of that was destroyed by a man who allegedly couldn't accept that the woman who left him had found happiness with someone else. Your thoughts in the comment section on YouTube or our Substack. Very interested to hear where you think this goes. What do you think of this relationship? I feel like every time we hear one of these stories, if there's any sort of silver lining, there's people that hear it and go, And they see themselves in it, kind of, maybe at some, or even some point of Monique's timeline. Maybe while she was actively with the person. And I hope it inspires people to get out and to get safe and to be aware. Although I don't know how Monique would have protected herself from something like this. Because it doesn't appear she was sitting there, you know, poking the animal in the cage or anything over the years. She was living her life. He was choosing to basically go to that zoo and to stand in front of a poker, choosing to become a victim of someone else's happiness, which is not a thing. Being a victim of someone else's happiness is not a thing. That's a mental health emergency, if that's how you are ever feeling. Your thoughts in the comments section. Join our Substack. It's absolutely free right now, and you can get all of our reporting a day before everybody else and commercial free. Binge away on it and weigh in directly with us here in the studio through Substack. So do check that out or on YouTube. And if you're on Apple Podcasts, be sure to press subscribe and leave us a review. We do greatly appreciate that. It helps signal to others that you're getting value out of our reporting, and it feeds it out to others. So if you're finding this to be valuable, please do leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. We'll continue our conversation in the comments. Until then, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers Podcast.